Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. All right. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. I've got a great guest for the show today, Balki Kodarapu. He has an extensive background in engineering, especially as a director. He's been a co-founder, a CTO of many different companies. And today he is, in addition to being a mentor in engineering and product leadership at Plato, he is a fractional CTO with a number of great clients and products. Balki, welcome to the show.
Hey, Thomas, thank you so much for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this for a few days and I'm excited to get started.
Absolutely. I'm excited about doing this. Let's start off by just giving folks an idea of where you fit in this in the ecosystem. And we know that a fractional CTO and what that does, but the kind of projects you work on and the sort of landscape of tech as you see it now and where you strive to fit in.
Yeah, tech ecosystem is evolving. That's an understatement these days, right? With the advent of AI, the post-quantitative easing where everyone wants ROI for their investment. Until 2 years ago, we could put money in the engineering money pit and not expect anything. All of that is changing. With that, my role and my perspective is changing, of course. Change is constant in this world, and I'm like living that every single second. But for now, my role as a fractional engineering leader is pretty much like doing what the companies want. And it's very different at different stages of the company. For example, the three clients I'm helping, they're three distinct stages. So one company, I just advise at a very high level that so they don't go off the rails by making blunders at very early stage. A second company, I'm embedded deep in their operations. For example, I'm the only engineering SME in the US. The entire engineering team, small but mighty engineering team, is offshore. So I'm the liaison. I'm everything in terms of engineering for that stakeholders. A third company is larger and scaling quickly, and I help. I'm a hybrid between an advisor and engineering architect for that third company. So I'm an advisor for the CEO and the engineering leaders there, as well as I'm the steward for their engineering roadmap. That's what the team wanted from an expert, so that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you clearly are one of those professionals who has a broad scope working with founders of startups and scale-ups, and then working with larger companies. And that's pretty difficult because what those different companies need at the different stages, as you pointed out, is very different. What kind of thing do you think founders and product leaders are maybe challenges that they're facing at different levels and some of the things that you see that they should be thinking about?
Yeah, these are materially different companies, but they're still startups. So my specialty is still startups. The common thing across them is growth. They're growing quickly. Their market is shifting quickly. They see competition, et cetera. It's all common. I guess it's even common for very large companies, right? But they're all startups at different stages. The common challenge is also being able to move fast. So that's pretty common for any company I go to. The natural tendency is for engineers to overthink, or even the product people to overthink what if scenarios, the edge cases. And I am the bad guy or good guy from the CEO's mind to shatter that myth that we have to move forward, even in, especially when there's uncertainty and unknowns. So that's what I built as my specialty almost. How to do that is, of course, the art and science to not piss off my people that I hired me or whose respect I need to get the work done. But moving fast is a challenge, right? So for CEOs, especially who are my stakeholders, who pay my bills, the CEOs, they want to move fast. And it's good that I agree with them. Like everything else being constant, we have to move fast. And we can unpack what that means. I'm sure you can relate to the sentiment, but for your audience and you, if you want to unpack what that means, we could do that.
Yeah, let's get into some of the things, so many questions, different ways we could take this. How about the current market today? And you mentioned it's an understatement to say that the AI is changing it's like changing everything. What are some things that are on your mind in terms of where things are going for the future of work or the future of products? Like one thing to just throw out there for an example, we had an age of and a lot of startups were doing basically like LLM wrapper, mm-hmm. or they might come up with a really good idea, but the huge players, OpenAI and Google, might Sherlock them, a fun mm-hmm. term that I learned recently, where you're building something and it just that functionality just gets absorbed up or just rebuilt by a bigger player. Those are some of the things on my mind. What are you thinking about nowadays during this really rapid, unbelievable, fast-paced situation that we're seeing now?
Yeah, so I've traditionally helped and built a specialty around B2B SaaS companies, and that's obviously getting disrupted with everything else, right? But just to give an example, I have a tool set as an engineering leader. I have a tool set of 12 different tools, but many different like philosophical frameworks. But if you just talk about the SaaS tools I carry with them, one of the trusted tool for me is engineering productivity and engineering experience tool. So it's already a new market. So they only evolved in the last 5 to 7 years. Just to give an example, like these tools can plug into your version control system, Jira and other systems, and can bubble up insights about how productive the engineering org is. And if you want to zoom in, you can look at an individual engineer, how productive they are, how much output they're generating. It's a whole other...
I'm sure the engineers love that.
Yes. Yeah. It's a whole other episode probably, yeah, but just like it's part of my tool set, especially as an fractional leader now, I have to be super efficient in knowing where to focus my time. So that's a trusted tool in my tool chain, but OpenAI has like pretty much taken over. I think just in the last week, you can connect every single tool that these system SaaS tools can connect to and likely can provide better insights because they can go so deep into Jira and GitHub. I haven't tested it yet, but I don't envy these vendors who have done this for a decade or more. They've invested their life into it, but OpenAI disrupted that with one small announcement. So it's just an example. But in terms of my specialty and what I help my customers with, I tend to gravitate towards companies that have either data or high degree of domain expertise. These days, it so happens I'm gravitating towards health tech companies, which have both. So one of the companies I'm helping, they have the trifecta of the founders who are like the world-class champions of what they're doing. So that's hard to beat. The second thing is their strategy about data. So they are collecting some of the most valuable maternity data in the world. The third thing is they built deep IP in the form of about a dozen patents, right? So even in the age of AI, if you can imagine, you know, paint a picture of if I help them apply Gen AI and machine learning on top of these three pillars, it's a pretty big moat for them. So that's the type of companies I'm helping and I'm rooting for. Even though it's a wrapper, but they have such deep moats, it's hard to disrupt them. In another scenario, they have specialized in just one very small niche of pharmacy management, which is setting up appointments for pharmacies. But they have such deep roots into that space, applying AI with their credibility. Anything we do using Gen AI is a win for them, right? So we're getting traction because they have so much credibility in the market for the one thing they do. Yeah. Over the long term, it may be tough to maintain that moat, but at least in the next 2-3 years, I'm positive. Just fancy wrappers won't help, but somebody who has domain expertise and these somewhat invincible moats would be still powerful in the short to medium term.
What are some of the opportunities in terms of the types of opportunities when you're trying to compete with the AI giants? Like, for example, one of the things I think about is if I have a startup and OpenAI builds basically the same functionality, let's say I do something with like cloud computers or something. If I can, is it, if I got started early enough, could I hope to have the strategic advantage of I have the data of the clients that I have won so far, and I can run machine learning on them and then have a special insight. But I guess that OpenAI can do that too, because they're able to train their models off of their clients. This is hard to find opportunities. It's like a shrinking space, it seems. And I don't want to be pessimistic, but a shrinking territory of opportunities to compete with these things. I don't know, I might be missing something.
Yeah, on the surface, definitely it feels that way. Again, I've been in the industry 20 years and I wake up a little bit stressed in the morning. Which company are they going to put out of business? And I hope it's not the ones I'm helping.
Yeah.
But again, I like go back to this. If you want to be an overnight success with a little fancy app that's just a wrapper, I don't think you could do it. Even if OpenAI doesn't swallow your business, they're making it very easy to build personal GPTs, right? So individuals, even like barely technical folks, it's being democratized. So they could build their own tool to do that. So I'll pitch my son, who's a 15-year-old sophomore in high school, and he's building a AI focus app for ADHD kids on spectrum. One day he may come on your podcast if you're
that's right.
But it's
shout out the name of his app just for
it's called Hyper Focus. So
Hyper Focus. Oh, a nice play on words.
Exactly.
Nice play on words.
Hyper Focus. And I'm not bragging about him, but if he can do it, anyone can do it. He's not even like this whiz kid that's into computers. So he got into wipe coding over a weekend and it's been obsessed. And he naturally has that domain thinking. So it's like, what would ADHD kids face? And then he's built a pretty cool prototype and a website all through vibe coding over a weekend.
All through vibe coding. It's very interesting. One of the things that I think remains an opportunity, or it has remained an opportunity, at least in the past 15 or more years, is enterprise software. So you have the West Coast. I know you're out on the West Coast. Folks making great tools, lots of innovation. It's always been the hotbed of digital innovation. But then one of the oversights is the vast amount of money in enterprise. And someone who lives in Texas, like myself, a lot of the opportunities, the big oil companies and things like that, where the cool nifty SF companies, they're not particularly thinking about certain use cases. And then so there is an avenue there. And then I wonder, as the technology world keeps changing and everything, is there still a lasting niche, at least for another 5 years or more, where specific enterprise use cases continue to be either for security reasons or other reasons, maybe difficult to solve through other means? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good thinking. As is expected, I talk to a lot of young and even older career seekers I talk to them every day. And here's what I'm saying. I won't take too much time. There's four avenues to me. I don't know if you can thrive, but at least survive in the short, medium term. Is one, the wrappers, but go after the companies that I mentioned that have some level of domain expertise that won't compete directly with the big players. So there's still opportunities. So this is most applicable for traditional engineers who have been full stack engineers that have done well. They have to change their mindset to both using AI tools to improve their productivity, as well as use AI to enhance their product functionality. So there's still pretty good room for traditional engineers to go there. So that's the lowest tier. The next tier is infrastructure. So I equate this to the gold rush when the prospectors didn't make much money, but the shovels and picks companies made all the money, right? So there's still opportunity there, but this is for more deep tech individuals or who want to get into deep tech. So infrastructure, deep infrastructure, building infrastructure and scaling infrastructure for AI companies or AI products. So that's second avenue. The third one is the hardest. Go to the motherships. Can you find a role in OpenAI or Microsoft or Google helping their build their frontier models? This is probably the domain like of the very lucky few, maybe 1% to 3% of us could even aspire to get there. But there's so much money there. Like I saw some news that dropped from Mr. Zuckerberg that he's offering up to $100 million for people with AI experience. Like I fell off my chair. I was thinking, you're saying eight figures, nine figures, and I had to do the math on paper. What does nine figures mean? It's $100 million.
Per salary, or he's using that money to build out a team that would pay several?
No, comp. It could be over 10 years or whatnot, but still it's like...
There's no way you could word that where it's not a lot of money for $100 million.
Even if it's
over 30 years. Yeah,
exactly. I would say like the next 10 generations are done.
Yeah, that's right. Pass it down to your grandkids.
That's the domain. I have a few friends at OpenAI, et cetera. They obviously don't share their comp or anything, but they must be like sleeping and breathing money every second of the day. So not all of us are that lucky or talented. But the fourth domain I'm thinking more about is the where the real money is, right, in the enterprise. So I don't know the exact stats, but I have a feeling 70, 80% of the people, the engineering people, work in companies that make real money, like the oil and natural gas companies, the old banks, and even government. I feel that there's a great opportunity for us to help improve the operations of these organizations, these traditional organizations. Like they may have skipped a generation, but with AI, we could help them bring them to the modern age, for lack of a better term, like government. Government is so far behind, but this may be another opportunity for us to help government through Gen AI.
Yeah, and sometimes it's because a company or an organization is so behind that creates an opportunity because they might look for solutions that the more cutting edge players wouldn't look for. And what do you think about how viable is it that will have a resurgence of on-prem, and not true on-prem, but like Llama. So like you have a company that wants to do AI, but they don't want to plug their stuff into OpenAI, even though OpenAI has private, there's ways to handle that. But where they hire experts to come in and they say, hey, we want to build our in-house stuff and you use something like Llama to build something up from the ground up. And it's like on-prem in a way.
You could still host in Bedrock on AWS, right? So that's still your model and you can guarantee your data is not leaking outside. That's another area I help companies with is it's not free as in like free as in beer. It's free as in puppy where you have to take care of your AI models. So even when you're like most companies I help, they're at a scale they can't afford or can't justify hosting their own, but they have to use OpenAI or any other APIs with extreme care, especially in the health tech industry, to make sure we don't leak any confidential data. So that comes with a lot of caution and help. But to your point of hosting your own models, in my mind, it's almost a solved problem, but it's not free. So you just can't like host and say, declare victory. You still have to keep up with it. One practical challenge is that these models are constantly evolving. So you have to almost updating your plugins or open source tools. You have to make sure you update them. And most likely you'll have to manage multiple models. So have some orchestration in front of those models. So we go to the right model for the right thing. Things like that. It's almost a sales-solved problem, especially you or your listeners can look at Bedrock on Amazon. That's pretty much the foundational framework where you can host your own model. So even I wouldn't recommend this for really small companies or startups that are just in prototype stage. But once you have some traction, and especially if security is a high concern, like health tech or fintech, there's a clean and not so expensive route to host your own models.
Yeah. And so with you as a fractional CTO, is one of the main use cases that somebody has an idea, but they're not technical and they need a technical co-founder. Is that how you operate much of the time, as a technical co-founder?
Yeah, like of the three companies, one of them is that way. I do that almost to help the community, but to be honest, that doesn't make me a lot of money. I go where the money
equity.
Is.
You get a lot of equity, but you know,
equity and goodwill.
Yes.
Yes.
And learn cool things along the way.
Yes. Yeah, you're allowed to do it, but I allocate maybe 5 to 10% of my time to that kind of stuff. But honestly, like, that's my specialty too. Once you get your product market fit, where you have two or three engineers, is when you'll see my value is amplified by 5 to 10 times. Whatever you pay me, you get 10 times out of it. Just by rearranging the deck chairs, you get that much out of it.
Okay, so the other use case is someone's got a company and they say, hey, look, we need a CTO and we want someone who really knows their stuff to help guide the development of the company.
Yeah, we need a CTO, but we can't hire a full-time CTO. So that's the most common use case.
Right. Excellent. And folks who want to reach out to you, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I love being on LinkedIn. I post twice a week on LinkedIn, Tuesdays and Thursdays, like clockwork. You can connect with me and or follow me there. And the second avenue is my website, yourctoin.us.
That's right. Your CTO, ladies and gentlemen. We've been speaking with Balki Kodarapu. And yeah, great conversation. Balki, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Thomas. We'll be in touch.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.